Hello, folks. Big news. We now have a Patreon. So for £5, £7, or £10, you can support us and get some audio commentaries, early access to podcast episodes, a monthly Q&A, and everything in between there. So go over to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback on the Patreon and see what all the fuss is about.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Sounds good.
Hello, and welcome to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback. We look through the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, and the creamy middles of The Simpsons Season 1 to 12 through random episode generation. I'm, of course, your host, Tom McRae, and mia padre, el capitan, he's my good amigo there. It's Cal Reader. Cal, how the hell have you been? It's been a while now.
Sí, español. Sprechen Sie English? Nine, haha. Bibliothèque. See.
Ah, yeah, I've wondered. I don't know if I can do
this. I think that was about three different languages. I don't know. I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I'm kind of plodding along as much as my post-lockdown body lets me. But yeah, bolder and chubbier as ever, but...
Have you been up and down the Seven Hills at these pub gardens now that they're all released back into the wild?
Yes. Yeah, well, like, I've been doing a lot of walking during lockdown anyway. Me and my girlfriend went on a whole, little breakaway, because we could, in the Peak District. Over one of the last bank holidays, where it absolutely pissed it down, and I've kind of like rambling's now a bit of a nice hobby of mine. You know, if we kind of do one of the episodes, like, you know, when Homer climbs Mount Springfield. Have we done that one? I can't remember.
No, we haven't. That'll be
possible future one. Yeah. I can tell more stories about my rambling, but on the day when we went on holiday, they absolutely held it down. We were like, fuck it, we're going to go for a walk. It's not going to be that bad. My belt broke that morning, so I couldn't... I was wearing some jeans because I was, you know, why not? I'm not a professional rambler. I'm an amateur. And it soaked through my jeans. I kept on having to pull my trousers up the entire time, to the point where it soaked so much that it was stuck to my skin. But also, it kind of like... I don't know how to explain it, Dave, listener. My trousers had fallen down enough where water could fall down into the crevice of the groin area, to the point where a small lake formed in the crotch, and much like a tea bag, my testicles kept on dropping and going back up into themselves. We were soaked through, and my girlfriend was like, "I thought you had a waterproof coat on," and I was like, "I did, but waterproof coats are only waterproof up to a certain point. Like, eventually, something's got to give." But her proper professional one was pretty good. Mine, from Marks and Sparks, which is kind of like for a light rain, not as much. So I was kind of... How I didn't get pneumonia, I do not know.
You should have wore those flood pants. Everything would have been coming up, Calvin.
Well, how about you, my good friend?
Myself, work's been ticking over. It seems quieting down now, folks. No more end of and start of financial year and big, scary Google contracts there and flowers for, oh, it's Martha's retirement there. Like, all right, why do you need £500 worth of flowers there? Calm down. That's all gone now. So, I'm back on the games. Cal, have you ever played the Yakuza series?
I've played a little bit of it. Would you recommend it? Where would you recommend starting if you've been playing much?
Well, because of my good friend Dan, at Dan Must Die, he's a Twitch streamer there. I was talking to him and he's been doing playthroughs of it, and he gave me a handy list of canonical, like, chronology, like where to start. And Yakuza 0, where it's late 80s Japan, and it all looks very cool there. It's ridiculous, quite hyper-violent, but then, like, oh, sometimes, like, you have to teach a... You have to teach a Dom, like, a dominant woman, sex worker, like how to be a dominant sex worker because she's really timid and you have to, yeah, it's just the side quests are incredible. You get to play old Sega games and the in-game arcades and that. Like, it's the extras that make the game there, and oh, Goto Majima, oh, what a man. He's my new man crush as well there. Move to the side, Heung-min Song there. So yes, I completely sell the Yakuza series, folks. Please give it a go.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how Japanese is it? I know it might be sounding like a daft question.
Oh, I'd say incredibly there. And my base level is Takeshi's Castle, where it's fun, if a bit mental. It's on that same scale there. But also, I mean, like, oh, the Japanese, what will they do? And that stereotype aside there. Genuinely good story. It does put you on the twists and turns there, and you do get to root for the two main fellas behind it there. So it's a complete recommend, folks. And the episode we're reviewing today is Flaming Moe's from Season 3, Episode 10, directed by Rich Moore and Alan Smart, written by Robert Cohen, with the original air date being November the 21st, 1991, and the couch gag being the two thieves up and steal the couch and boot the family off it. And before I get into the admin and all that, spoilers, folks, I found this a fucking great episode there, and it's one from a childhood. Still holds up, da-da-da. But for admin's sake and for the sake of continuity, Cal, do you have any nostalgic memories or little bits from this episode that you remember?
It's obviously it's a classic. I always, for some reason, I always have it in my head that the band in it is Red Hot Chili Peppers. I don't know if it's because I like the Flaming Moe's and the Flaming bit or something like that. And obviously there's the Christy Gets Cancelled episode, which is, I think is this yes. season. Or it might be late season.
Oh, that's season four. It's the finale.
Yeah. So I always get mixed up with them. But I remember wanting to try the drink when I was younger just to see how great it was. It sounds fucking powerful as shit, I must say. But it's a good fucking... I'll stop swearing, sorry. It's a classic episode, you know. It's one of the most famous ones. One of the most memorables for the drinks, even if you can't remember the ins and outs of the episode. It's kind of when The Simpsons starts kind of getting into its own, like, run and gets yes, a little bit more...
Absolutely.
A bit more wild, should we say. It's not, like, full-on... Lady Gaga comes to fucking town, but on the other hand, it's still, you know, it's good enough where, you know, the band Aerosmith didn't need to be in the film, in the episode, but it works quite well. It kind of makes sense, you know. If a band's touring, they're gonna go to like the hit bar to go to. But yeah, I it is a good strong episode.
My initial memories are, fun fact, folks, as well, this was the very first episode that I watched.
Really?
Yes.
How can you remember?
Because, I briefly remember, and I don't know how old it would have been, maybe about 5, I'd say. So, 4 or 5. So, I know it was 1999, but my dad would tape VHSs of stuff, and there was some overspill of, like, Simpsons before the stuff he wanted to watch. And I'd see these little yellow characters on the screen, and I was like, you know, move to them in that. And he recorded a bunch, and that first one in the bunch of the tape was Flamin' Moe's. And I think also because he likes his classic rock there. Aerosmith are in there. That was a big sell for him. But I've got vivid memories of the Flamin' Moe's drink, the Aerosmith bit, Moe's voice, which I'll say now, is very cartoony to what, like, he becomes, where it's a lot more, you know, I don't know, deeper, a lot more gravelly, and a lot more depressed. He's, like, really pitching this, like, the 500,000 bananas bit, and, like, when he gets mad, or, you know, trying to cover for Homer, and I'm Flaming Moe. It's, like, really cartoony. That drew me in. And, I'll get to it later, the other bits I vividly remember as a kid, but yes, that's some, behind-the-scenes history there, folks. And how we kick off this episode... Oh, tell you what, fucking start as you mean to go on, Cal. We kick off with Eye on Springfield. And again, a fun historical fact. The very first appearance of Eye on Springfield there. Oh, nice. Hell. I mean, the theme alone, but... I mean, throughout the series, you'll get that intro. And you'll get the significant bits like the... Babe pointing with the statue there and Ken at the dogs there and getting the tattoo. But then in later series, they intercut it with newer sort of behind the scenes stuff, like I think a famous, the one I remember the most is Krusty like waving in animals to Krusty Burger, and out they come in burgers, and he like, fuck off and puts the hand over the camera. But hell, what are your thoughts on Ion Springfield as like a small running gag or running show in this series?
I love it. I do love anything where it's kind of shows the small towningness of like, well, Springfield or any show really.
Yes.
Obviously, this is a Simpsons podcast, therefore we want it to be about Springfield. but you know, we have in Britain, it's not we don't have like our own channels per se, but we obviously have the local news. I remember one time the top story was about a man who had a pet duck who used to go into pubs with him. And that was the head story of the day. And I was like, this is the biggest, like, and bear in mind, it's not just a town, our local news is, it tends to do like a full region of,
yes, it does.
Rather than obviously just like Sheffield or, you know, Kettering or wherever. But it's, I don't know. I just love little things like that. Like we to kind of date when this podcast was recorded, we've not long had a local election. Obviously I'll change names and stuff like that, but we had like little post-its for you know, to vote for your representative for the local council and shit. And I'll not obviously say the proper town, but say for example I lived in a town called Springfield. We'll use Springfield and Shelbyville examples. I live in a big city, but a bigger city, but my inner village is, we'll say, is called Springfield. Literally 10 minutes down the road is Shelbyville, and I got a post-it thing of this guy, say his name was John Smith. And he was just like, "Hi, I'm John Smith. As you may know, Sheffield gave £125,000 to Springfield to help with the community. But Shelbyville wants that money for themselves. No vote for way. Me and I will make sure we get that money." And I'm just like, yeah, that's so fucking cheesy and hilarious. Wow. I'm voting for this guy because it's kind of like as a comedy vote. But shit like that, it just makes me laugh. And I love the fact that, like, you know, there's nothing going on. So it starts off with their seventh part documentary about the bikini.
So there was actual infighting and, like, war of two towns amongst them there.
Yeah.
Well, now, are you for or against marrying our cousins? Because they're so damn attractive.
I live close to Barnsley, but I'm not actually from Barnsley.
And within that as well is, you know, Springfield oldest man meeting Springfield's fattest man, and Dredrick Tatum, what it's like growing in Springfield, and, like, any celebrity who's, you know...
I hate that town.
Yeah. Oh, that town's a fucking dump.
But also the fat guy and the old guy is just like, do I see a spark? Could romance be blooming? It's just fantastic. I love just like carny TV, really. It's absolutely the one.
We have Bart walk by whilst his bikini analysis coming on. He's like, "Well, Bart, why are you up? Oh, it's Lisa's slumber party there. You know, how can I sleep when those hens are cackling and plotting against me there?" And they're doing some game which... I'm sure people, kids in America have done, but, like, you know, boys sleep over, girls sleep over, not. I've never thought to do this. The old wax in there and the, oh, whatever it freezes as, that's your partner's future career. That I've never seen this before, Cal, but it looks quite cool. I'd be down for that.
It's very, like, Wiccan-y. I guess, like, guys' sleepovers, it tends to be just kind of like... watch porn and the first one to get the boner, he's gay. Even though, you know, and I never won that game with Father Martin. It always made it a little bit weird.
Fuck's sake.
I don't know what games did you play as a kid when in sleepovers and stuff.
Honestly, it was just like console gaming, or I don't know, watching the American Pies, or like.
Scary sex movie, some or shit. Oh, sex, see yeah. What I mean? Sex, etc. Guys, what you still do, if any female listeners, what they'll do, they will legitimately watch some sort of softcore porn where they're like, I'm not gay because I'm with my bro. And he's looking eyes with me whilst his, you know, pants get tighter and stuff.
Yeah, it's like 2 minutes in, oh yeah, can you believe we're watching this? And then like 5 minutes later, it's like, oh, it's actually quite awkward watching it with a bunch of 14-year-old boys.
And your dad. He does the same.
I was just round my mate's house, just me and him, and he had his sister round, and like his sister's mates were all having a sleepover at their house, and there must have been about 10, and like kind of a similar thing happened where they would just sort of like piss us off around and just run into the bedroom, call us like, I don't know, gay or you smell or whatever, as it was cool to do in the early 2000s, and then run off and then they'd all giggle their heads off. So I thought, right, I'm not putting up with this. I want to play San Andreas with quiet decorum. So what was the rational thing to do there? No, not tell the parents. Go in there and do wrestling moves on them, because I was a smelly little wrestling fan. I tell you what, put the perfect ankle lock on them there. It was like Kurt Angle trying to win the title in 01 there. Good God. I should have had the straps down to make it stronger. Like you, that's the secret there, Cal. You got to get both the straps down there, and that intensifies that ankle lock there. But yeah, and a couple of like German suplexes here and there. Just, oh, I was in my element there.
Nothing made 18-year-old Tyler feel like a man than beating on these 7-year-old kids.
Hey, anything to get that dub. That's all I was. That's what I told the courts anyway. But it does reach a part where they just end up just pestering and assaulting Bart there, and one of them ends up kissing him, and they end up jinxing him through it as well. And oh God, Homer's just, he is just a grown child as well, because going, oh, what is it, boy? And then Bart's obviously not saying anything, and he's just, oh, say your name, why would I do that, my lad? Oh, I'm fucking jinxed, you idiot. And oh, check this out, the animation, because I love David Silverman, he does some great episodes. He's on this one as well, but you see a little bit of Homer's realisation, like, oh wait, he's jinxed, like, you see his little eyes flash, and then he fucking smacks him, Cal. And it's a proper thud as well, great Foley.
Yeah, it makes sense, because, you know, he did jinx, he broke the rules of being jinxed, he deserved it.
He's a right stickler for the rule.
One of four, I understand the importance and the legal binding of a jinx, you know. My sister's been jinxed ever since 03, and we've never heard her speak again because we just beat her to death in 06.
The girls end up spotting him and they want to give him a makeover, and Homer doesn't stand up and help his son from these, well, technical bullies. He's just, run for it, boy! And he's off. Just, again, great animation, like, right out of a proper thriller here, like Bart running and then he's trying to get the obstacles in front of him. Locks the door there. Love the shadow in his dark room. You get to see the screws getting drilled out the door. Very dramatic. Big close up on his face. And they're relentless. They're remorseless, Cal. They're through to the door that they've drilled down. And Bart just decides, right, well, pain will end this suffering. That's the only way. I'll jump off this two-story house. And he jumps. And that's it. And you just hear a big thud. Fuck me. But oh, they're going to find some victim. They're going to find someone, and they coerce Maggie in there, and Homer just spots her midway through the paper, and she's dressed up to the nines there. She's like a Rotherham girl out on the town. I didn't want to say Sheffield for the respective party there, but...
thank you.
I mean, it's not completely connected, but I like this start there, and like...
Yeah.
I'd give out in later seasons, like, oh, technically this is an inciting incident to the inciting incident, but I don't know, this worked, maybe because, I don't know, we've all had sleepovers and that, I was able to resonate with this more. Homer's pretty good, Bart's getting victimised there. I really enjoyed the opening, Cal.
Yeah, I agree, I think it's cool. You know, I've got sisters, I know how relentless they can actually be when it comes to shit like this. It's well needed, it's well paced. Obviously, like you said, it doesn't really... go for anything else, you know, it doesn't really run in very well with the rest of the episode, but it's good, it's funny.
This actually causes Homer to think, well, fuck this, I'm out of here, I'm off for a pint. So he goes to Moe's quite glub, and he figures, well, what's the matter, Moe? And turns out business is down, healthier, people are drinking less there. It's such a bitter pill for mind-numbing intoxicants like myself trying to push this drug, but you just, oh, can I get a bit? Yeah, fine. Oh, no, wait, we're out of beer. And just Homer doing the scream. Perfect little scream there, like Home Alone. But, you know, got behind on his beer payments, and they had to cut him off there as well. Spent his last 10 grand on the love tester, and Homer even tries sucking out through the pipe there. Which, like, I've always kind of dreamt of doing, but then, like, you know, post-COVID and also being, like, a functioning... also being, like, a functioning adult, you just think, yeah, like, oh, no, just imagine the build-up and just the bacteria through that there. But did you ever have that kind of dream, like, oh, I'll just completely neck this keg there, or was that always, like, a dream?
Possibly. Like, there's a line just after this where he's just like, sorry, Homer, Barney's already sucked the pipes dry, really cut up his gums. I don't know if you had the same, you know, like toothpaste. This can sound really weird, but trust me, it's kind of linked. With toothpaste, you can actually get two different types of tubes. So you can get the one which is like where you squeeze it to get the toothpaste out. Or there's like a circular tube which has got like a bit of a button slash lever at the top. And basically, as you push that lever, there's a mechanism inside the tube what kind of pushes the toothpaste off. So you get more for your money's worth, really. It basically clears all the actual tubes out. Colgate tend to use it. But that used to come with a little plastic lid on top, which is basically similar to like when you go to the dentist and it for like mouthwash and stuff, I assume is what it's for. And I remember being a kid and I was just like, I wonder how many of those cups it would take for me to really need a piss. I got to about 11. I just basically taking shots of water and water and water and water. But we've all done it. You know, when you wake up after a heavy L session, you've run out of pop on the water on the side, so you just go to the tap, you just basically,
oh God, yeah,
almost waterboard yourself to ensure that you just get enough water. Like, I don't think I've ever wanted to really go directly into from the tap. I guess it, like, if there was like a water, like, you know, like how they fill out Pepsi and stuff.
Yes. Oh,
the one of those. Gun, yes. Yeah, pump guns. Just get one of them. That would, I'd do that, I guess. See how much I could do, but probably not straight from the tap.
Oh, you know what? The pump gun thing does sort of give me an idea as well, because you can have like four different buttons as well. You know what? I probably would want to do it, and I'd probably be enjoying it first, but then I realise just like, oh no, wait, my head's upside down and I need to keep drinking this and it's got to go back against itself there. Like, oh, like, I wouldn't be able to get my head around it and just sort of fuck it or be sick there. So
how are you with like downing pints then?
Well, I'm fine with like non-carbonated stuff, like, yeah, your mixers and vodka and all that. I don't mind that, but no, I couldn't do it with, hell, lagers, let alone ales and that, and
yeah,
Guinness. I used to have a friend that loved the Guinness and black and could mouth it down in about 7 seconds there. God. Big old gulps on him.
It's, well, the way to do it is basically straight in your neck, and you basically make it like a straight line. That's how you don't swallow, you just basically choke it down. But, and like, I can do it, but it doesn't, that doesn't mean that it will sit.
Homer and Mo are busy trying to think up of, you know, other drinks they can, you know, try and sample there, including, you know, gin and tonic. Do they mix? But Homer knows a banging drink that he made it up on the spot. And this is where we get the origin of Flaming Moe's, folks.
Flaming what?
Sorry. My God, that's the Zuckerberg in me. the Flaming Homer. Forgive me. Now, Cal, have you got any sort of research on the Flaming... Well, I guess the Flaming Homer at Universal, maybe what is actually in it? You know, an IRL Flaming Homer?
Give me a second, let me find it again.
I'm close. No, I only asked this, folks, because, you know, pre-recording there, he was busy talking like, oh, right, it's Universal Studios, and that's what it looks like, so... I just had the assumption.
It wasn't a universal. It's just a random one what I found, because I was curious if it had some sort of cough medicine in. So the one what I found, because it's very much like a dirty pint, like a top shelf dirty pint. which is basically everything off the top shelf. That's how Homer kind of does it. Is it's just literally what reminiscences of booze he's got left. He just throws a bit in. This one, what I found, which sounds all right. It sounds okay. 1 ounce of brandy, 1 ounce of peppermint schnapps, 1 ounce of sloe gin, 1 ounce of blackberry liqueur, 1 ounce of strawberry juice. I guess that's to give it like its pink colour, and like that would be the cough syrup, and then 1/4 ounce of 151 proof rum. So gather the ingredients, pour the ingredients except rum in highball glass, stir, float, the rum's to set it on fire. Float the rum on top, ignite with a match and extinguish before drinking. Now the thing is, I've worked in like one bar in my time. We didn't ever do like flaming shots, though there is a bar in Sheffield what did do flaming shots. One of my friends did work there. And all it does is it basically just burns off it kind of caramelizes the alcohol a little bit and burns it off. So when you like flambé stuff, you're basically like quick cooking the food, from my understanding anyway. I'd try it. I don't know what the... Obviously, you want to substitute the cough syrup. Is it like the drowsing? Is it the drowsy stuff? Is it...
Well, I'm assuming, and I'm only doing this because of, like, I'm into the hip-hop and the rap culture there. It's close to like codeine or, the purple drink, as they say. I can't think, it's not cough syrup. It's just like, I don't know what they use it for, but it's a drug. It's only prescribed in that. But like the one Homer uses is for kids there.
I decided to mix the little bits that were left in every liquor bottle. In my haste, I had grabbed a bottle of the kids' cough syrup. It passed the first test. I didn't go blind.
They say everyone can float in the Dead Sea, but Selma sank right to the bottom.
Huh? I don't know the scientific explanation, but fire made it good.
The paracetamol probably does not work well with the alcohol, and depending on how strong the cough syrup is, may potentially kill you. I don't know. But I'm not a chemist or a drug dealer or,
Hey, look, if I can trust the chemists and, future the big Atlanta rapper, I think I can trust a little drink, Cal. Come on. But yes, this is the origin of the flame in Homer, and they're busy whipping up there, and they do find, bottled cough syrup among Mo. And what's the real kicker and what's the real thing that makes it all come together? It is lighting it on fire there. It's like a party in his mouth and everyone's invited, and the fellow on the love tester even settles his phlegm there. And this is where how we get the conflict and we get the kickoff for this episode as we about to go into the second act. He asks, what's it called? Well, it's called a Flamin' Mo. No, that's right. It's a Flamin' Mo. It's Flamin' Mo, I'm Mo. Right. I guess, can you think of famous examples where, people have took credit for others' idea? Because all I think of is really Zuckerberg and the Facebook thing. I'm sure there's other examples, but that's all I can think of.
Apple, because Steve Jobs kind of fucked over Wozniak.
Oh, yes, there was, yeah.
There's got to be loads out there. Thomas Edison, he fucking stole loads. I'm shitting on Edison.
Oh no, he was the king of the patent. It's like, oh, yeah, he was a great inventor. No, he just knew when to
patent and everything. Yeah.
Elon Musk, he's not like linked to Tesla at all. He literally like bought the family name with his fucking dad's apartheid billionaires there. But hell, I don't want to get into it, but yeah, that's that's a whole other kettle of fish as well. But yeah, some, they hate this joint, but they love this drink, the Flamin' Mo is a roaring success now. It's capturing the lightning in a bottle, in a pint glass, if you will. And this is where we get, it's pretty much Diane from Cheers there. It's Colette. He ends up hiring this extra hand. Do you know anything of the Cheers series or the wonderful cast that was there who went on to do bigger and better things?
I know of it. It's a bit post my time, and obviously with Frasier, being a spin-off. I think there's a few other. Is Mork and Mindy a spin-off as well? Like, I've never watched it. I know the Gyps and Jibes and you know, Wendy Walking. Norm, yes. Yeah. Exactly, everyone knows your name.
A young Woody Harrelson was his right-hand barman.
Ted Danson as well. Because on another episode, they actually go to the bar of Cheers, don't they?
Fear of Flying, and literally the only person there is the most prominent guest voice that they ever had in Kelsey Grammer, which made you think, like, how do they not get him? Like, was he just too busy with Cheers? That's the biggest puzzle.
He might have not wanted to be fair, you know. But yeah, it's have you ever watched it? Have you ever watched an episode of it? Or
I've watched some scenes, and it's well, as far as I'm aware, it's aged reasonably well there, and it's, again, the great dynamic of the characters there. And Fraser just steals a lot of the scenes he's in, because there's this tightly wound upper middle class guy there in a working man's bar there, so how it writes itself. And let's not forget, the voice of almost every Disney comic side character, John Ratzenberger, who's a Ham in Toy Story. He's the big truck in Cars. He's like one of the bugs in A Bug's Life. He's done a lot of Pixar films. Just insane the amount of work he gets.
He's a Pixar Lucky Charm. I don't know if I know clips of it, and I know like Ted Danson wore a headpiece for it, but it's kind of like, he has got thick hair, but he had a bald spot, so he had like a very circular like crown wig, basically. I don't know. There's lots of references to Cheers and such throughout this episode.
We have Harve Bannister there, who works with Tipsy McStaggers. He approaches Mo, possibly buying this recipe off him there. And I love Mo has just got the mentality of, you know, oh, Ronald McDonald works at McDonald's there. He must make the burgers, because his face is all over the place. Hey, what's Mr. McStagger really like? Well, I tell you, he makes one great mozzarella. Oh, yeah, fine, I'll tell him. grown man asking him that as well. Just, oh, can't believe it. But Mo refuses there. You know, he's, do you know how much blood and sweat are in this drink there? All right, folks, figure of speech there. But we get to see Harve pour a little bit in his mysterious suitcase there, which we'll see get tested later on, and a nice little cap on this scene. Barney just saying, oh, yeah, good for you, Mo. Oh, yeah, it would give away a $1 million idea like that. And we just think, oh, fuck.
I had a science teacher. He used to be a semi-pro footballer. He then got injured and fucked up and had to retire. When his dad died, he got a load of trains, and his mate he didn't really know what to do with him, and his dad was just like, he's like, oh, I'll take him off your hands, it's fine. Was in Scarborough, and like he saw it in this train shop, and each train was like worth like 500-600 quid. Ooh, and he was just like, he gave him for like 200 quid, and there was about 20 of them. He had the worst look in the world, and it's just kind of like, apparently, obviously, it could all be bullshit and stuff, but like when he was in university, this guy found a way to make an engine what ran on water, and he said, why don't you come harse on me with this, you know, with this invention and stuff, and he was like, ah, nah, like, I'm cool. I don't think it's going to work. And then that engine got bought out by Shell for like millions and stuff. So he didn't have the best look.
Shit house. Oh, are you kidding me?
Someone said, like, I remember meeting someone, one of our mutual friends, this Irish guy, who was a bit of a cock, really. And he was just like, ah, so he's a bullshitter then. I was like, but why would he bullshit about a load of things what didn't go well about himself? Like, why would he lie about that? Like, oh yeah, I'm a perpetual failure. Like,
we see, surprisingly, we're at a Springfield Elementary now, and it's show and tell time now, and Martin's being a right fucking little swat and saying, oh, the next time you use a gas chromatograph, remember to thank Mr. AGP Martin. And oh, of course, Krabappel's loving this now. Little fun wrinkle in this as well. We will see the gas chromatograph getting used for the secret for the formula for Mohs later on there. But Bart, I like this. This is cute because Bart just, again, likes his, well, at this stage in the series, he likes his father and adores him there. Like, he admits that he's not even a smart man. He's not a famous man. And he's, like, that's his favourite person. His favourite inventor is Homer. And he made the flaming Homer, and everyone's against him saying, oh, Mo the bartender invented that. And everyone's against him, so he goes, no, this isn't true. In fact, I will show you if you let me demonstrate. And he just whips out what, like, Smirnoff and Captain Morgan's, oh, those liquor bottles? Oh, brought enough for everyone.
Yeah. It's the line of, take them to the teacher's lounge, you'll have what's left at the end of the day.
Yes, brilliant. Now, was this a thing with you teachers drinking at school or that? Because when I, like, used to get given little jobs around primary school, particularly like years 5 and 6, they were only a bit older. One of them was to clean out the staff room,
mm-hmm.
and they kept like bottles of whiskey in there. And surprisingly enough, it was Grouse, and a lot for you know, Sheridan's, the white and black cream all in one. Yeah, that I distinctly remember that. And surprisingly, teachers for teachers. I was like, that makes all the sense in the world there. Why is there not just hundreds of bottles of that? I was shocked there because I just thought, oh, it is like that Simpsons episode. Was that a thing with you at your school, or is that just a, I don't know, Midlands thing? Or?
I never cleaned out the staff room or anything like that, but there were teachers who were known to keep alcohol in supply closets and stuff like that. Bottles of whiskey. A lot of more of the older. Not to say that it was purely the older teachers, because some of the younger ones got sacked for being alcoholics and drinking on campus as well. But a lot of it was the older. Majority of them were the older generation. The one teacher in question.
So show and tell. I feel like you probably did that at some point, Cal. What was the best thing you ever brought into show and tell? What sort of banging bit of memorabilia or item did you bring into wow the audience?
So I remember show and tell in primary school when we were a little bit younger, and I remember bringing in a Beanie Baby and that was it, and like bringing in some art because I went to like that auntie who goes to like art classes and shit. And it's just hit paint this season, paint this like beach location, or paint this, paint that. We went to them, so we had a load of good paintings, and I showed them off, and my teacher was like, "These are really good. I'm going to show them to my like the teachers in the teachers' lounge and shit." But for when it was someone's birthday, each month they would have like, at the end of the month they would do like a birthday assembly where people in the year would show off like their presents and what they got and things like that. I don't know if they kind of stopped that now, because obviously maybe the kids what were a bit poorer, what didn't really like, I guess, I don't know, like, I never had an issue with it, but like I remember once bringing in a GameCube game, and basically the head teacher this one head teacher used to do it, but like he would like introduce you and say, what did you get for your birthday and what have you brought into showers and stuff, and like, did you have a good birthday, and you know, and then at the end everyone would sing happy birthday to you in the school. It was quite sweet really. And I had a GameCube game, and I was just like, because the disc was so small, I found that really interesting. I was just like, open it, look how small the disc is, and you open it, it's like fair enough, and I just showed the disc to everyone, and he was like, there you go, and I was like, oh shit, no one's impressed. Like,
oh no. Look at how diminutive it is. Exactly. It's PlayStation 1. Come on.
Look how small it is. I'm not compensating. You're compensating, Mr. Hutchinson.
My best thing I ever brought to show and tell was hell. Ah, fucking. Y'all know I'm a wrestling fan, and the Kurt Angle vivid pipe dream and breaking 8-year-olds' ankles. That was only fueled by bringing in a Rey Mysterio mask.
Nice.
Now you ask. Oh, right, that's quite cool. Now, was it the proper leather one? Oh, no. Didn't have so much money back then, so it was just... it was the kid's one, because I was a kid where it's just like made of this, all right plastic, but it had all the cool detail of his debut there, nice red and blue and white there. And literally, it was like the kids saw, like, gold or just, I don't know, It's like they saw the coolest thing ever. They just thought, oh, whoa, it's a mask. Can I wear it? Can I wear it? And like, I tell you what, you had to be fucking careful with who you gave it to, because I knew there was some cunt that was just going to smash it. Thankfully, didn't happen, because like, I was able to pick people out and that. But no, that was just really nice. That's the thing, folks. No sort of horrible punchline there. It was just a really nice memory that people were really interested in this mask there. And then I was just going around, at the time, looking really fucking lame, even though I was like 8 and you can just do that because you're a kid. But I was just like, yeah, look at me do a 619 and just trying to swing around a pole or a lamppost and it not really working. But oh no, it was really cool. It's a nice little cherished memory when I was 8. So Fleming and Moe's is the place to be there, you know. It's just like a... hell, I'm trying to think of famous clubs in LA, because I'm assuming it's slightly taken off like one on the Hollywood Boulevard strip, or you know that CGHB, that rock club in New York. I want to say it's like that. All the big stars are going there, and all the big rock acts. And Homer can't even get in there. His name's not on the list, and all these celebs are filtering by. And speaking of celebs, we get our big guest stars this one, Aerosmith.
Ladies and gentlemen, some new buddies of mine stopped by tonight. Maybe we can get them to come up here. How about a warm Flaming Moe's welcome for Aerosmith?
We're just hanging out.
Oh, come on, guys. Free pickled eggs. Hello, St. Louis!
That's Springfield, Stephen.
Yeah, right.
I won't really do a mini bio here, but I'll just say I've never known a group to have like a successful like career renaissance like every single decade. Obviously shot to fame in the 70s, had a renaissance.
Beatles?
The
Beatles, they've continuously been popular. And Rolling Stones?
I'll tell you what, that's continuously popular. I mean, with Aerosmith they would hit slumps, but then they just have one song or one album and bang, they're like everyone's favourite again. Then they fade off and bang, they're back again there. Maybe Bon Jovi. But it's just like 70s, big, and then a dip. And then Walk This Way, the Run DMC, that remix, that banged. And then 90s, Armageddon, Don't Wanna Miss a Thing, that banged again. It's just insane how many ups and how many comebacks they've had. But are you a fan yourself? Do you walk this way? Are you making love in an elevator?
Not so much. I appreciate, they're a band what I appreciate, you know. I'm not a big fan of the Beatles, but I appreciate what they do, I appreciate their music and stuff, so it's, you know, not my kind of like, don't get me wrong, if I'm at a wedding or whatever and then the fucking Armageddon song comes on, of course I'm gonna sing it. Like, I'll sing it, I'll grab your dad and scream it in your nan's face if needs be. I get requested to leave the wedding, but it's it's one of them. It's not really my vibe.
Ah, another fun real life fact, folks. Cal and everyone else listening, do you know that I'm named after Steve Tyler?
Are you really?
Yes. Obviously not the Steve bit, but yeah, they just liked the surname of Tyler then. They just went with that. That's a true story there, folks. And then now in later life, I'm now hoping like, Christ, like, I hope it wasn't conceived to an Aerosmith song. I just don't ever want to know that fact there, like, at all. Then I won't be able to enjoy, like, Don't Want to Miss a Thing, or, you know, Janie's Got a Gun in the same way as well. What about, like, as guest stars? How do they hold up with, like, Chili Peppers or, you know, other big celebrities in their voice acting?
I think they used well in the point in the fact of... They're not overused, but they utilize enough to kind of be like, oh, that's a funny joke kind of thing. You know what I mean? They're not pinnacle to the episode. They could have replaced it with any band. They had the funny joke of like, hello, St. Louis. Stephen, it's Springfield. Oh, hello, yes. Springfield. You ready to rock? I was wondering, you know, when you were saying like, is hoping like, you know, whatever. I was like, what? That it doesn't turn out to be like a massive nonce or something like that. Because like, I guess you could kind of like wing it and stuff. But it's recorded. It's going to be on the internet, so now everyone knows that you were named after a paedophile. No, I'm not.
Oh, please, flat earther. Trust me, he's a flat earther.
Is he actually? Oh,
yes. And I think it's more that's the fact that I'm a multi-millionaire and bored. Oh, let's see what this is. I'm going to invest some money into it. And you're like, for fuck's sake.
I like the pictures of him where he's like, how come he looks like everybody's grandmother? Like, freaking grandmother.
The place is rocking there. I like the little interstitial. I like the little scenes in between whilst they're doing Walk This Way there. I think my favourite one is the very first one where Otto, and I think that princess that Homer was dancing with in season one.
Yeah.
Princess, Prince Jasmine or whatever. They're like dancers stuck to me on the table. And then it's just the Maud and Ned Flanders there just having a nice old time. Just trying to see through the legs. I like that. But then we just quickly cut to Homer busy trying to get into Moe's through the through the little chain window there and he fucks it. Now, Cal, what if I told you I've done this multiple times in my life? Would you be surprised?
Not particularly. Pray tell. Tell me the stories.
It would happen more like with friends' houses. Like, right. If for some reason they couldn't get through, then it's, oh, it's through the window. But usually it is just a typical top window that's long enough. It's not a square boxy shape like this one in the episode. And I was a lot slimmer in that, and it was in my early teens, so they'd be able to wriggle through. I'll ask again, would you be surprised if I try this at Sheffield's hottest rock disco bar?
What, in Corp?
No, try another street. There you go.
West, oh.
You sound disappointed now. Oh, for fuck's sake. Yes, this was at West Street Live. Well, you can obviously know I wasn't successful there. And the fact that the window into the men's toilets is so small, it was more curiosity like, oh, what if I just stick my head and shoulders through there? Because it was one of those where there was no chance I was getting in. I was too faded. So I thought, I'll go around the back where there's bins are. Oh, look, there's a window. I'll just peek in there. And then it was literally just the toilet cologne man going, hey, fuck off, mate. And I was like, oh. Just the most... No, the non-confrontational, no, I am wrong here. Goodbye. And I was gone. I wouldn't fit through this anyway. No, you know what? I will leave. Thank you.
In school, I broke out of a class through a window, which was open.
Oh, cool.
And then, like, I did it a few times. And the one time I got caught, this teacher walked past and she was like, what were you doing in that bush? And I was just like, oh, sorry, I lost something. I dropped, like, my pencil case out the window, and I was just picking it up. And she was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And as she was walking away, she saw me with, like, my bag on my coat and shit, and she was like, wait, you weren't doing that. Go back into class. I was like, okay. So as I was walking into the building, the bell went, so I just literally walked in, turned around, and just left.
Nice. So you did a Mark and Peep show. What if you just run away? Yeah, go on. Oh, he's reached the car park. Not quite Grizzly Adams, but it's a start. Homer decides to confront Mo about this, you know. Oh, how could you? This became the lifeblood of Mo's, and it's all off something I gave to you. If it was up to me, my face would be in a bunch of shitty merchandise there as well. little Pop Funk Mo, by the way, thank you, for that lovely Christmas present, Cal. Yes, I have Uncle Mo in a little box and everything. He's my first ever Pop Funko, thanks to Mr. Cal Reader there. And so as Colette says, oh, you know, Morris? Which, they never returned with that being Mo's name, did they? Which is a shame. It does fit him. Is this true? Well, you know, he may have come up with the recipe. I had the idea of charging, what, £7, £6.95 for it there. And then it comes to... I don't think we've really talked about the Bart crank calls in depth. Not that we're going to hear in that, but this is one of the... Well, hell, they did it early, that they've already subverted the joke so early in season 3. And please, Cal, walk us through it.
So, obviously, the reason why they work so well is because nobody's ever in Moe's, but he asks for a huge ass, to which huge ass comes and answers the phone. So, yeah, here you go. Here's your phone. He goes, oh, hello. What? Who's this? He goes, oh, I'll level with you, mister. This is a prank call. What went wrong? He's like, oh, okay, well, better luck next time. And he just hangs up. He's like, what a nice young man.
The most rational man in Springfield there. Oh,
But
that's a nice charming cake.
You have it every so often. Like, I remember, like, literally the other day at work, this I was talking to this woman and she was arguing with me and she was like, you know what, actually, you can talk to my husband because he knows what he's talking about and you better be ready because you know him, a financial advisor. And he came on and he was like, oh yeah, you're right. And I was like, yeah. He was like, oh, so what's happening? And I explained it to him. He was like, oh, all right, that's fair enough. And I was just like, but what about this? I was like, I explained why he couldn't do that. And he was like, right, fair enough. Well, I've learned something new today, you know. Every day's a school day. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like,
where were you?
Exactly.
Before we get to our second act break there, we get a nice scene and the revelation that the fact that, you know, oh, Homer's saying, oh, well, you know, business, is it? Well, I've got to let you know, you just lost yourself a customer. And every single time he tries to make the point, the cash register rings out again. Like, he just doesn't need Homer there. He doesn't need the one. He just needs the new customers there. And, like, it's quite sad there, but, I mean, it's just a perfect demonstration of it. And Homer walks off forlorn there. We're into the final act now, and we get a nice Cheers intro parody as well. And I like the song so much as a little kid in that. I don't know, it was quite catchy. I like the visuals of it. Even though there's a grotesque fight going on and someone's gotten glass, I just thought, oh no, this is really cool. I like the visuals there. I like the song in it as well. Nice parody there. And they even get the Norm Barney bit with a little Woody Harrelson clone saying, how's the world treating you, Mr. Gumball? And he just belches. Of course he does. What do you think of this intro parody there, where everyone knows your name?
It's good. It's very... Simpsons are always very good with the music and very good at, like, parodying little stories and making it fit as though it is questionably the original one. Who knows?
Yes, Alf Clawson works wonders. He really does there. We have Harv now back. Tipsy McStagger wants to buy your drink. He's here? He just won't fucking let it rest there. You know, Mr. Greggs, he, you know, bakes all the pies there. So McStagger must make all the drinks there. So he offers him a cool $1 million there. But he still treats himself there. It's not for sale. And Harv is getting really, you know, cutthroat about it now. You idiot, we've got a laboratory for this kind of thing there. Got it all. Apart from one ingredient.
Hey there, what can I do for you, Harv?
Well, sir, Tipsy McStagger would like to buy your drink.
He's here?
No. I mean, my company is willing to do what it takes to get that recipe. We're prepared to offer you $1 million.
Sorry, Harv. But like I told you before, it ain't for sale.
Don't be stupid. We have a laboratory for this kind of thing. We've got it all figured out. Except for one ingredient.
Brace yourselves, gentlemen. According to the gas chromatograph, the secret ingredient is... love! Who's been screwing with this thing?
I just love the... I like the delivery on love! Who's been screwing with this thing? But yes, the ingredient dies with him there as soon as, like, 30 cases of cough syrup roll on through there. Not obvious at all. And then we get a nice scene. One of my fave gags. Not my favourite moment, though, folks. That is very close. We have Homer trying to go to his new watering hole, which is just this criminal-infested shithole, which is a great cue to talk of all things pubs, Cal. I need your A, best favourite pub you've ever been in and your best regular pub. I also need your biggest shithole you've had the misfortune of drinking in. Please, the floor is yours.
I've drank quite many places. My favourite pub is probably the one where I do the quiz called the Bath Hotel, which is opening soon. It's quite a small little boozer. It's across from like a halfway house, so you get a load of mental people round the sides and such like that. But it's nice. It's a nice little boozer. It's cheap. It's, you know, the staff's really, really, really friendly and the quiz is really good. The worst boozer wasn't necessarily the worst boozer, but I used to frequent it a bit because of the characterfulness of the clientele, should we say. I don't really want to say the name just in case, you know, not to say that anyone listening to this pod would be working there or anything, but it's notoriously quite a rough pub. Yeah, no, actually, there's another one that was actually shut down. It's called Free Canes. It's called the Free Cranes. It was notoriously one of the rougher pubs in Sheffield. The last time I went there, and we were kind of got pre-warned about how kind of ruffian the clientele could be, and there was karaoke, there was a man in a dress, and we were like, okay, this is fucking, I don't know if it was like gay night or something like that, but it's fucking great. And I was having a great time. This old man, as I was tying my shoelace, this old man comes up to me and he was just like, what are you? I went, what do you mean? He went, are you Christian? Are you Catholic? Like, what are you? And I was like, well, I was raised Catholic, but I'm not really like anything. I'm kind of open to other religions. What are you offering, my friend? And he was just like, oh, well, you're Catholic. Well, I'm Church of England. That means we should be enemies, innit? I was like, I guess. Exactly. And then he kind of like left me alone, and he was going around things, and as my mate, me and my mate were just like hogging the karaoke to the point where the DJ guy was just like, if anybody else wants to go on karaoke, please do. And like, eventually a fight started off with this old man. So everyone separated him, and we just all bum rushed the guy out of the bar. And like, I separated the guy who got attacked first, and then he punched him back basically. And he was just like, I calmed him down. I talked to him, and I was just like, dude, you just need to like, don't let it ruin your night. Like, you know, pricks are out there, but you know, there's a reason why he got kicked out and you didn't. Like, and then it just kind of, it went from there. It was nice. It was fun, but you know, unfortunately, that has now since shut down. What about yourself?
My fave's a toss up. It's either the Cavendish on West Street, but that was just purely because I was able to get Lily's cider. But now I would say it is Shakespeare's, which is just before you get into the Kelham Island area, folks. They're a wonderful pub garden in there, and it's not too crowded of an old man pub there, but it still retains the nicer decor and the fashion of it there, so I'd probably go with that. The worst one I've been in was, I'm trying to think of the area now, but it's just off of Boston Street there. There's a large Aldi right next to a student living area called The Forge. I can't think of what it was called, but it was like a Sheffield United club fans pub only, and it was just like you would get death stares in there. They hated all the students there. It might be. It was right by Chino's, if you know that, in Sheffield. Just never felt welcome. Watched one of the Super Bowls in there as well, when they had new management. But it just didn't feel comfortable going in at all. Not starting fights there, but it was more of a vibes there. So nowhere near your extent there. No one tried to sing Sweet Caroline for the seventh time and getting glass. Nothing like that. They're busy trying to look up legal, you know, ramifications of this. And I completely forgot about this cow. Lionel Hutz. Phil Hartman back at it again. Hell, only there for a few seconds, but again, he never misses there. Say, oh, you can't copyright a drink there. And he just... what does he say, Cal, if you remember?
I'm sorry, you can't copyright a drink. Oh, this all goes back to the Frank Wahlberger case of 78. How about that? I looked something up. These books behind me don't just make the office look good. They're filled with useful legal tidbits. Just like that.
This time he didn't bullshit his way through, but it's just how surprised he is. Ah, look at that. I looked it up. Ah, here we are. Now, folks, this is my favourite part of this episode. It's the sarcastic rant, guys. It's, ooh, look at me, I'm making people happy.
Stupid mole, non-inventing recipe, stealing pug nose.
Well, Homer, maybe you can take some consolation in the fact that something you created is making so many people happy.
Ooh, look at me, I'm making people happy. I'm the magical man from Happy Land in a gumdrop house on Lollipop Lane.
Oh, by the way, I was being sarcastic.
Well, duh.
David Silverman, the way you can tell if he's particularly been hands-on with a certain scene is you look for the character's fingers there, because he always has the character's fingers wiggling to emphasize their point, or a certain word in a rant or a bit of dialogue there. And I'm not ashamed to say I've had a particular screenshot of this rant as my Mac laptop screen for going on 3 years now. It's when he points to himself when he goes, "Me," and he pulls that massive, like, fake grin with his fingers going into his chest. That's been the screensaver forever. What a performance from Castellaneta. And then I think when he goes to, like, "I'm the happy man in Happy Land," you see, like, Marge's face in the mirror. Great yeah. direction. You see this guy, "All right, mate, just..."
In a gumdrop house on Lollipop Lane. Oh, by the way, I was being sarcastic. It's just
It's just a great escalation. It's just a wonderful scene there. Hell, did this do it for you, Cal?
It's probably one my favourite part of the episode as well, if I'm honest.
Oh, double. I like
that. Yeah, it's just a well duh bit. What just gets me every time. Because I've been in situations before where I've been on both ends of this, where I've been like, "Well, of course, you dumbo. By the way, I'm being sarcastic." And it's just like, "Well, of course you are, you fucking cunt. What are you on about?"
And, like, oddly enough, we cut to Mo, who's just had his hole, finally,
hey.
From Colette. And then he goes, "Oh, something's troubling me, Morris, there. I was thinking about..." "Oh, no, before that, don't worry. My mum won't be home for another 20 minutes. Ah, that's not me anymore, faithful listener. I've been living independently for like 4 months. Nothing was happening for like the past 3 years anyway, but that's not the point."
"I'm not in a dry patch. You're in a dry patch."
"I was thinking about Homer Simpson." "Oh, no, that's fine. I was thinking about Civil Danning." "No, it's not that. I think you should sell your drink and give Homer half the money there." Mo, feels guilty and ends up... He's going to split the million with Homer. Finally there. Now... with this line, he goes, "Oh, sleep with the chick once cost me half a million bananas." Love the voice. Now, are we to say Mo's a virgin, or just you sleep with a new girl once and it's half a million?
I think it's...
How'd you read it?
I'd say it's the latter. Because it's how when he flirts with her at the beginning, when she's first introduced, is kind of the suaveness of someone who has had sex before. Probably not a lot of times, but still had sex.
"I was just thinking about Homer Simpson."
"That's okay. I was just thinking about Sybil Danning."
"I meant, I think you should sell your drink and give half the money to Homer."
"But honey..."
"He's your friend, Morris. And you took advantage of him."
All right. "I'll split the million with Homer. Jeepers, Mary and Joseph. I sleep with a chick once. It cost me half a million bananas."
We get this, I guess it's a fantasy sequence, or just the deep pits of Homer's depression there.
Mo.
Yeah, we've got to go to the movies for a Mo and A, because all work and Mo plays Mo, and Homer just goes off and he just sees Mo everywhere on the TV, people running in the street, and you forget how ugly Mo is when you see his face plastered on a kid's body. It's just... It's funny, but it's just horrifying as well. And the old people as well really get me. And the nice touch of you see little Moe's and Sunflowers. "What's the matter?" And the great scream by Castellaneta again.
Yeah.
And this is where we're going on to the home stretch now, folks. Aerosmith are performing again there. Joey Kramer, he's having trouble. He needs his drumsticks back there. But Krabappel, the old slag, she's not having it.
"Hey, where's Joey?" "Mrs. Krabappel, I really need my drumsticks."
"Come and get them."
Finally, Harv has finally got Mo's signature there, because usually, we just find out the recipe and steal the idea right underneath them and run the vendor out of business there, like 99% of big corporations there. I think as soon as you saw Homer up in the rafters there, like Sting or the Higher Power, you just think that signature's very hot and quick there, because I did the tiniest bit of research, and there's a grace period with contracts and deals like this. Like, if you've signed it and then something goes awry, there's a grace period of like 72 hours or 5 days or something there. So if Mo signed it, he'd be as clean as a whistle. He'd be crammed. That's the sad thing.
Is it though? Because the thing is, it wasn't witnessed by anybody. You know, he would have only sent that.
Couldn't you use Colette?
Yeah, I guess. But it would the company, man. It'd be hearsay. It'd be their word over his.
Oh, fuck, yeah. Damn it, it'd be a snafu again. Yeah, that protects itself.
You're going to be a rich man, Mo. I gotta tell you, the way we usually work in these situations is to steal the recipe and run the inventor out of business. C'est la vie.
What the?
Fools! You poor, pathetic, misguided creatures choking down your flaming moes, all the time wondering, how does he do it? Well, I'm going to tell you. The secret ingredient is...
Homer, no!
Cough syrup. Nothing but plain, ordinary, over-the-counter children's cough syrup.
Cute. Thank you, Mr. Nutball. Gotta go, Mo. Tough luck.
Holy cow! You just fell on Aerosmith!
Big reveal. cough syrup. Nothing but plain, ordinary, over-the-counter children's cough syrup. And a big mad laugh on him, and like, oh, fuck. And yes, thank you, Mr. Nutball. Rips up the contract, and he's gone.
Twitched and Homer fall.
Yes. Oh, now this was the funniest thing to me when I was five, because it's just, it's physical comedy. It's pratfalling. And just the scream on him as well. You see the guitars go flying up. And Barney's selling the thing. Holy cow, you fell on Aerosmith. And this really fat man just on top of five grown men. Oh, it was peak to me at the time. But it turns out, the secret's out now. Everyone's got their flaming moes there. Like, everyone's got their Ray's pizza in New York there and what have you. Everyone's got their own Melton Mowbray pork pie. The secret's out. Everyone's got it. Now, Moe's has been deserted there, and Homer comes along there, but Moe invites him in, and they realise the fact that, you know, sorry I left you hundreds of thousands of dollars, no, I'm in the evil as well, and the two wrongs are sort of making a right there, and they end up sharing a drink, one flaming Homer. Oh, do you think Aerosmith will be in tonight? Doubt it. I like this ending, Cole, nice and fitting, it so, wraps up in a neat little package, as Homer would once say.
It's very, it's a very nicely, bittersweet kind of ending. He asks about Colette, and she says, oh no, she went off to Hollywood because she felt she could be a film actress, but I feel she was better off here. That's kind of like a bit of a dig to the actress who played
her.
Yes,
to Shelley Long. Very astute, Cal, you're right.
Yeah, who, she was in Cheers and left to pursue a career, what did not really pan out, fortunately.
No. The film choices were stink. It was just like rom-coms and just bad comedies at the time.
Yeah, but yeah, that kind of wraps the episode up. It's nice. It nicely wraps up everything perfectly. You know, everyone's kind of back to the status quo. My review of the episode, it has its laughs. It has quotable moments, memeable moments as well. And you know, it's an overall. It's a good time. It's kind of like easy watching Simpsons. And I don't know if you... Obviously, it kind of enlightened something with yourself, being the first Simpsons you've ever watched to the point where you've then finally become a podcaster of the Simpsons and shit. Rating-wise, it's, you know, it's definitely up there. I don't think it's a solid 5 out of 5, if I'm honest. Just because... though being very memorable, there's better episodes out there, but it's definitely strong. I'd give it a strong 4.2 bikini parts of Ion Springfield.
Ah, wonderful. With the 0.2 as well, a rare appearance. Ooh, for me, hell man, there's nostalgia attached to this, and it just completely holds up in spades for myself. They're just a great story there, like your cocktail, your social network there. Two friends getting pitted against each other there. Great gags. Aerosmith did not overstay their welcome. They fitted the role well. Yeah, just wow, wonderful lines there. Great animation from Silverman and great individual little scenes and designs there. Colette was just a nice little one-off character. Really enjoyed her. Hell, I don't know what else to say. You're preaching to the converted here. I'm singing the wonderful praises of this there. This is easily in my top 10. And with all that being said, I'm giving this a nice big round. 5 out of 5. Gas chromatographs.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Sounds good.